Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. The time is now, as I clear my throat, 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is February the 4th, 2023. Yes, it's February the 4th, the shortest month of the year. And you know what that means? It's Black History Month. Yes, you know what it means. But yeah, I had to throw that in there. But we are going to talk a little bit, see if we can talk a little bit about Black History Month, but we do have some other things we're going to talk about. Our featured part of the show is going to be really a lot of fun, really interesting. But in the first half, what we're going to do, we're going to get into a little bit of the political situations, and we're going to go back and talk about a couple of things that came out after last Saturday when we had the three officers on and had our discussion regarding Mr. Nichols' murder. Some things have been floating around the internet, and we're going to talk about how does that crap happen? How does that crap happen? So that's what we're going to do in this first hour. And then again, as I said, in our second hour, we're going to talk about the music industry and pretty much the entertainment industry as a whole, but basically the music industry, you know, the major labels versus being independent. What are the pros and cons? I had a conversation with a few gentlemen who've worked with major labels, who've been on major labels, who are independent, and I thought it would be a good discussion this Saturday. It was initially the topic we were going to have last Saturday, but after what had occurred last week, I rescheduled it for this Saturday. So without further ado, let me open up the mic to the lady of the house, my co-host, the right hand of the TMGN Network, Miss Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis.
Hi, Jen. Hey. How's it going?
It's going. How
doing?
I don't know, but it's going.
I'm not going to complain about the intro.
Hey, you know that crossed my mind.
I knew she was off.
You know, I'm gonna go ahead and edit this. You mean the intro of the music, or just how I intro? Just your intro. Your intro.
Our intro is long, but the intro with my name.
Uh huh.
The introduction.
Well, I mean, it has a ring to it, you know. Pollock Hawkins, Dave. It sounds like, you know, what is it? Like a championship, you know, type thing. You know, I mean, you know, and a lot of people, I know you don't introduce yourself a lot like that. I mean, but that's what you have. But because I think you explained because of the family, the relationships, the family names, and I find it interesting because there are a lot of people that use their, you know, their first, middle, name or initial, or their doctrine, mm-hmm. or the third, and some of them want you to greet them in that manner. I'm like, get out of here. You know, I have a friend of mine. She said her cousin calls himself a doctor, put his name out there. But well, I'll say this: his name happens to be. How should I put this? His last name happens to be Kimball. Now, if you think about a doctor whose last name is Kimball, you think about a TV show, right?
Not necessarily.
I'm sorry.
Then I can see him wanting doctor in front of his name. If you go to school, as long as they go in order to get a doctorate, you want that DR in front, you know, because you worked hard
what I'm saying is that where, okay, the last name is Kimball, and so when I hear the name, you know, if I hear someone say Dr. Kimball, first thing I think of is the TV show The Fugitive, right? That's mm-hmm. what I think, because that was that character's name. But really, it's based on a true story. But anyway, but he says he's a doctor. So he wants to be, when you talk to him, you call him Dr. Kimball. But he's not really a doctor. See, he claims he is, but he's not really a doctor. And it's just kind of comical. But it is funny how folks, you know, when I worked in construction, I worked on a elementary school here. And there was a principal there. And I saw her plate, you know, her name thing on her desk, and I said, excuse me, ma'am, Miss so-and-so. She said, I'm sorry, it's doctor. So I said, oh, excuse me. Every time you address her, you have to say doctor.
They went to school for it, Michael. I can see them saying that.
I get it, but, you know, I mean, come on, don't. I mean, if a person slips up, they slip up, you know, but if you don't, I don't know. I just find it kind of comical at times, you know. Maybe other callers or other folks might have some opinion of
it. I'm sorry. Can I say one thing?
No, go ahead.
When a person goes to see their doctor, primary care, don't they say doctor so-and-so?
Because you're at the doctor's office, so, yeah, you'll say doctor so-and-so. It's just normal because you're looking at them in there. You know, it's just where you're like, well, doctor so-and-so or doctor so-and-so. But when you're just seeing someone, you know, maybe I'm not making the right explanation for it. You just know their last name or whatever you say, and you'd be like, excuse me. Especially if they're a relative, you shouldn't have to address your relative as Dr. So-and-so every time. I don't think so.
Really.
Let me open up some microphones here and see what our other co-hosts think about it. Officer Jeffrey Crenshaw. What's up, my brother?
Hello, Michael.
Yes. Hey, just like you just said, Officer Jeffrey Crenshaw.
I don't always say officer. Well, I don't always say that, but I did say it so that the listeners will know that he's an officer.
I took the bass out my voice since he had all the bass in his.
You sound like you've been inhaling some helium or some shit.
How y'all doing today? I'm good. I can't stay long, but I wanted to call and share my love with my family.
Thank you. And I have to tell you, thank you so much, you and Officer Harper, Officer Mason. Wow, you know, I've had some folks who some were listening live, some went back and listened to it, and they really appreciate it. In fact, they said, "How did you manage to do that?" I said, "Hey, man, these cats, you know, I mean, they were like they were glad to hear what all three of you had to share and say." So I want to thank you very much. That was very educational for myself, and I'm sure for a lot of folks who did listen.
Right.
Well,
correct.
If they want to know the secret to it, all the praise and glory goes to my wife, Donna, because she has made me a footman. She has made me a footman. Before I met her, I was eyes, smiles, boobs, and booty. After I met her, she taught me, she trained me to when another woman walk in the room or look at me, for me not to look back at them, for me to look down at their feet. And I became a footman. I love me some feet.
It ain't about the boots and the booty. It's about the. It's all about the heels and toes, huh?
That's it.
Crazy. Let me open up this mic here. I
have
to open up this mic real quick. Right. Let me open up the mic. I already opened it up. It is the one and only Out West. You know, the place that most say is the best. Mr. Timon Ship.
Hey.
What's going on, y'all?
Timon.
Now, Mike.
What's going on?
Mike, I had a friend of mine die from sucking on a woman's toe. Old toenail punctured his lungs, killed him dead. You're going to learn it all, toe? Ain't good toes to go down on, Mike. Hey, you're a footman.
Hey,
watch out now.
Hey, you know what? You know what? That has a new meaning for the term tofu.
you gotta watch yourself now. You know that can be a dangerous thing. You know the first thing that I don't know if I think Facebook had to stop it. Women was taking pictures of their feet and posting them on Facebook. Everybody ain't got good looking feet.
Right.
If he can strike a match off your baby toe, that means it's too sharp.
Damn.
Lord.
Like a match.
You know. I want to just go over something real quick. Again, thanks, Officer Crenshaw, Officer Harper, Officer Mason. Very great conversation. I have to go back and listen to it and just make sure. And I want to apologize. I know sometimes I get kind of excited and a little overboard, and, you know, because I'm like, you know, just hyper about it, you know. So I'm going to start easing back more. Trust me, I'm going to really start easing back more and more.
Say
and
what?
Leave it to
them. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Janet,
yeah.
Did you hear that?
Wow. But wait a minute.
What's
he's
wrong
back
with
like
him, Janet?
He's back.
Janet, what's wrong with him?
Probably from all my fussing.
Yeah.
Mike, what do you mean by ease back?
Oh, am I allowed to speak now? Oh, okay. I'm going to let people finish without interrupting. I'm going to, you know, wait for that pause, make sure they're finished before I say anything. Mike, interrupt me. Mm-hmm.
Janet, you have done to Mike. You have done to Mike what my wife has done to me.
And Mike ain't seen Janet's feet.
I gotta catch myself.
Mike
I gotta
ain't
catch
seen
myself.
Janet's feet.
That's right.
No, not really. Unless I had some sandals on.
Right.
It don't matter. That's the only place we're allowed to look is down.
So you've gotten to know a lot of different name brands of women's shoes and stuff on styles.
Man, when I was undercover, they were trying them all on me.
But no, seriously, I have to, you know, a lot of times I go back and I listen and I catch myself. I'm like, oh, damn, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. So, you know, there are some people who don't listen to their shows. And I do. I stopped doing it and I said, well, let me go back and start listening, you know, to what I said or what I didn't say or what I wanted to say. So I'm going to start paying more attention to it. But what I wanted to do before we get into the other topics is go back on some of the things that were released since we talked last Saturday about the Nichols case. This rumor that hit about him having an affair with the mother of one of the officers' kids and this and that and the other, it flew across the internet, across social media like wildfire. And I can't say just social media. I mean, there were actual, you know, apps Snoops. And, well, Snoops said that, you know, that they were trying to see if it's true or false, you know, fact check. And it's not true.
Nope.
It's not true. Because I'm sure everybody talks about the mainstream media. They would have blew that up first. They would have been the first ones to report that before anybody on Facebook or Instagram.
My connections during the investigation, they pretty much said, they didn't come out with the ex-wife or ex-girlfriend or whatever. They said it was either an ex-wife or ex-girlfriend or baby daddy was one of the officers of the girl who worked at FedEx. And he just happened to see Mr. Nichols talking to her one day and basically targeted him from that point. It's what they're getting from their investigation. It said nothing about an affair or anything like that, just that the two co-workers were talking one day.
Okay. But here's the thing. And of course, that's going to come out in the trial, you know, because I haven't heard anything, you know, I haven't heard any news source, reputable news source, elaborate on this rumor. I haven't. Maybe you guys have, but I haven't heard anybody speak up saying, oh, well, now we know that this is what the reason why. And if it was, that would be the dumbest ass thing those other officers could have done. And why I say that, if he's a jealous guy over the fact that, or not the fact, or the assumption that he saw them talking, which I'm sure she talks to many males on the job or anywhere else, and decides, hey, man, I need all four of you to help me whoop his ass. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but to say, think about the wives of those other officers thinking, so you mean to tell me you went and beat up a kid to the point where he died for another man's woman?
Mm-hmm.
What does that say about how you feel about me, Noodle?
Well, taking cancel for Christmas.
Christmas, New Year's, Fourth of July, Halloween, name everyone, President's Day, Martin Luther King Day, St. Patrick's Day. Just go down the list. They can cancel all that.
Those type of situations do happen, Mike. We had one in Atlanta to where an officer divorced his wife, and he saw the mayor's assistant at the time, you know, out to dinner with his ex-wife, and he couldn't deal with it. He followed him around in the car. The mayor's assistant realized he was being followed, stopped his car. The officer jumped out of his personal car. They got into an argument. The man got back in his car. They got into a car chase in civilian cars to where the man wrecked and the officer got out and shot him because he was out to dinner with his ex-wife. I mean, people's mindset is just out of control, you know.
Now, you know, Crenshaw, I've had this thing I've been thinking about. Why do these people believe that they're gonna get away with murder? Because my thing is, you didn't go to no school or nothing on how to be a good murderer. You're going to get caught. We've had you got the rich white cat who killed. He was a lawyer. He killed his wife and his son. He got caught. And then you had the dude out here in California who drove his wife and kid off Devil's Curve, and they knew exactly that dude that tried to kill them. I said, where in the world do y'all think y'all gonna get away? Do they not understand that the people got profiles? Okay, they profile this. We created all this right here in the good old U.S. vein. So they already have a full database that they can go upon and figure out. That's all those people do. That's what their job is, as detectives, as police officers, to look at situations. And, hey, bro, when they sit down and they break it all down and do the DNA and all this, I'm telling you, you're going to get caught.
Yeah.
You're going to get caught. It is not going to be. I mean, some people have gotten away, but down the road, they going to catch you. They may take them 4 or 5 years. They caught that dude, the Golden Gate Killer. They caught him 30 years later, but they got him.
Yeah.
Right. And I got to say this real quick, because you got a good point there, because it's so funny. About an hour before we started the show, I was just flipping through the channel and everything, and I stop on the crime channel because they do reenactments of certain historic cases that, you know, just like you just said, they had the one of here in Atlanta, Fred Tokars, who was a successful lawyer and judge, and Officer Crenshaw and Janet, I know you guys know about that case, you know, who had his wife killed and was killed in front of his kids, their kids, and he's now in prison. And then one more thing is that you look at the case of the Sullivan case. Now, you guys may not remember that. I forgot her first name. But they were socialites. She was black. Her husband was white. And he wanted her bumped off because the socialites didn't like the fact he had a black wife.
Yep.
You know, that's crazy. Person comes up to your front door, flowers, and kills you. And the whole time your husband planned the whole damn thing.
She was a city council member, and I actually tracked the car that they had stolen from the residence and passed it around in the neighborhood, and I tracked it on the last spot and caught the guy in it that was driving, who basically gave up everybody else who passed the car around till it got back to the original person.
And these people got money. You know, they got money, and that's part of the greed, is that where here you got money and a successful career. That don't matter to them. It don't matter. I mean, many of us would love to have the money that they have, right? And might be fine with it. Even if my wife got on my nerves, I ain't going to try to kill her. You know, I'd be like, baby, I'm going to go hang out with the boys. No, you're not. Please. Okay, go ahead. But I'm going to kill you because you don't want me to go hang out with the boys or whatever. And a lot of these insurance policies are crazy. No, go ahead.
Their prison is full of people, and I don't know if you have ever thought about it. Prison is full of people who made that one choice, that one decision, and they shit their life away. They shitted their life away on one decision.
Right.
And when they make it, then all of a sudden, and they could have stopped it, but that was their choice. You know, I had a friend of mine say, oh, man, that's, you know, I graduated comma cum laude, summa cum laude. I said, yeah, and there's a lot of summa cum laude sitting right over in the pen, too. They sitting in jail. Got great education.
Mm-hmm.
Had a great life. But guess what? They could not make that transition of just to live. I mean, you're free, but you're also free to be an idiot. There's a fine line between the genius and the idiot. Very fine line.
Right.
Things in
so let me
anger can't take it back.
Right. So I got to switch gears because I'm looking at the clock. I have to definitely keep time because I know our guests are going to be calling in the second hour. We got about 34 minutes before they join us. So I want to go into a couple of the political things and stories that are out here. And as I said, you know, to me it seems like we're at war with Russia, but on different grounds. Now, this story here comes up about the U.S. shoots down Chinese spy balloon off East Coast. Local government. Okay, so coastal residents near the site where a suspected, keep these words in mind, suspected Chinese surveillance balloon was shot down over the Atlantic Ocean Saturday are being advised not to try to turn debris into a souvenir. Pieces of the balloon could make it to the coastline as U.S. military members work to pick up debris from the ocean, according to the government of Horry County, South Carolina, which includes Myrtle Beach. Quote, debris should not be touched, moved, or removed, a Facebook post from the Horry County government said. Such items are part of a federal investigation, and tampering could interfere in that investigation. That's interesting because you might go to jail if you touch it. You might go to prison if you touch it. But what's you guys' thoughts about this? I mean, they're saying, and keep in mind, they said suspected. They haven't confirmed it yet, but suspected. And then Biden canceled his, what was it, Janet, his planned trip because of that, correct?
That was Blinken.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
That was Blinken.
Blinken, I mean, I'm sorry, not Biden. I said Biden. Blinken canceled his trip. But, I mean, like I said, though, isn't it like we're having a war with not China, but with Russia, in a sense,
right.
On Ukraine territory? China is in agreement with Russia. I mean, this is like a chess game. All the pawns are moving first, okay?
Right.
These other countries are pawns. China, Russia, America are playing kings, queens, you know, down the line, bishops.
Well, the
but don't you see this as a pawn, a chess game that all these pawns are being disturbed to the point, and all these other countries are sitting back making the moves?
More like a poker game.
Not chess.
Not chess?
Because they said Biden was playing chess and Putin was playing checkers.
Okay. But you said a poker game, so like calling a bluff. Right.
Right. Well, the surveillance balloons have been going on for a long time. It's just...
True.
To me... You know, if they wanted to actually sneak a spy balloon in, the altitude would have been different. They strategically did what they did to where it could be seen, either to try to determine how long it would take us to acknowledge it, because they've already got satellites up to where they can get different information that they want. So this was more like a poker game, a strategic thing that they did to kind of touch with the USA. You know,
also,
to see how long it would take us to acknowledge it and what we would do and how it would we would react, simply because they know our government is divided. So
they also
are we going to run? Go ahead,
Jan. Well, I just wanted to say one thing. The military was saying that they have equipment that can scramble. If it is a spy balloon, they could scramble when they're over certain sites to keep them from seeing things, but they totally forget about that when they actually shoot it down. You know, so if they did go all the way across the United States, if it did go on certain military sites, it wasn't going to see anything because they said they could scramble it.
Well, they can scramble it, plus they also notify those bases that are within its path, and they cover and conceal certain things so that it can't be seen.
Right.
So,
now,
so, and you know, the bad thing about all this is that when people see stuff, like, you know, Trump sent out a thing on Twitter telling the people when it was over Montana to shoot it down with their guns, right? And it's like, fool, it's up 11 miles up in the air. A gun ain't going that far. What is wrong with
right.
you? And they dumbasses probably went out there and tried to shoot it down, and it's like, fool, you ain't getting no, any old hunter know his bullet ain't going 11 miles up. That's a hell of a gun
right.
if you got that.
And see, strategically, they wanted to get a reaction out of the American people. Simply because China is on side with Russia, and they wanted to see how quickly the U.S. was going to rush in, shoot it down, and start pointing the finger towards China, all because that dumbass general opened his mouth and said he can see us at war with China in 2025.
Yeah. Correct.
So if we shot it down and started pointing the finger because Congress is not together, you know, they're so damn divided right now, and then we turn around and do something against China based on not knowing all the facts of what that actual electing, you know, then now we're really in a world of hurt because we done gave all our shit to Ukraine.
Well, not. I don't think we gave it all.
Well, no, we didn't give it all. We gave them what we've already used and what we've advanced, haven't advanced. We've built more from the Bradley fighting vehicle. We've built better equipment. You know, we have the Shillelagh and the Chaparral missile launchers. So we didn't give them everything. We gave them the things that we felt were obsolete.
That's right. But Putin also thinks that Putin has, he thinks that he's at war with America because Ukraine is using all the American equipment, you know. So he's telling his people that he's at war with America in Ukraine.
Well, you have propaganda floating around, Janet, which is D.T. Rump.
It's the tool. It's the great tool. Okay, it's the great tool. But I want to ask this, is that where with us helping Ukraine, let's go back a little bit. Ukraine was what before it became Ukraine?
Sovereign country.
It was a sovereign country, right? Wasn't part of Russia.
Nope.
A lot of them were a part of Russia. Crimea was a part of Russia. But during the wars, during the separation, okay, because what Putin is trying to do is rekindle, take back all those things that used to be a part of Russia. Once Ukraine got its independence, Crimea got its independence, they basically told them, look, bruh, you know, Ukraine has been their own independent country for years. And now all of a sudden you're just going to stroll up and you're going to take it back because you want Russia to be back what it used to be. It ain't going to happen.
But that's okay. That's what I was saying. Yes, it was part of Russia. It was part of Russia. Right. He wants to go back to the old USSR.
Yeah, that was many moons ago.
I understand. Right. So we already got that understood. He's trying to go back to the old USSR. Right? That's what he's trying to do. So now the United States is trying to help Ukraine keep its, it being a sovereign country. Correct? Okay, so what does the U.S. benefit from doing so and assisting in this? What does this country benefit? I want to hear what you guys.
The benefit is Ukraine has a huge, as far as different grains, they have a huge agricultural set up that they've had that people have been doing business with for a long time, and also, Russia was selling oil to Europe and everything, but then what they don't understand, they knew that Ukraine was going to end up being part of NATO. They didn't want Ukraine to be part of NATO, so he figured he'd go in and take it. And he's not already crossed the line. He ain't going to get what he's trying to get. They're not giving that up because they're not trying to go backwards and let a country grow. That's why they're building up over there in Taiwan and the Philippines, the United States is, to let China know, bruh, if you decide that you're going to try to do anything stupid, we're going to blow this puppy up. There will not. That's
but
why
wasn't
ain't
there
nobody going to be pulling it. What's that?
I'm sorry. No. I was going to say, wasn't there an issue a while back about Ukraine being part of NATO? Wasn't there an issue about that based on
you mean the blackmail?
They wanted to join NATO, and Putin said if they did, he was going to do war. But this has been going on since 2014. When Barack Obama was in office and he had drew that red line, he should have went on and stuck to his guns, but he didn't. So Putin thought, especially with Trump being in, that he can just and listening to Trump about Biden being weak and senile and all these slow and all these things that people were saying about him on the other side, the right side, that he believed it. And when Trump couldn't get back in office, he decided to go on into Ukraine. And what he did was cause Finland and Sweden to end up joining NATO. Because they didn't want him coming to their country next.
Right. So now you just said they didn't want him coming to their country next. Okay, so because the reason why I asked is because it is really about power over certain regions, correct?
That's right.
And let alone the economic power you would have across the world. Because regardless of these issues we have fighting everything, every country depends on another country resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a disagreement with China, but shit, we buy China stuff and China makes stuff for us. Isn't that a kick in the head?
That's when we went and we went. Decided that we were going to dive into globalization. Okay, I'm gonna bring you that product instead of paying that American worker. Okay, which is why they did all that. I'm gonna get it to you cheaper. So we'll let them do it and they'll pay their people that. But the problem was when our job market, because we're a capitalistic society, right? You cannot. Globalization is having its issues because we have a job problem. Do you know that there are 750,000 jobs
Amen.
It's the best employment we've had since the 60s. Okay, so this is our employment at 3 points, and we still got jobs. So they're trying to bring back factory jobs. They're bringing back all this stuff to have everything American made because Trump went and sold them on that American situation. We were at one time a 40% production country.
That's
now
right.
We're down, you know, it dropped. Okay, you dropped that.
Became consumers.
Now, yeah, you turned us into straight consumers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a consumer-driven society. If we don't spend, our country does not move. That's why you see all those infomercials trying to shove stuff down your throat you don't need. That's why people are building storage. They're building storage buildings instead of building houses so they can sell you a storage for all your crap that you didn't need in the first place and get you to
right.
spend that money on that storage.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I agree with you. I truly agree with you, and it's working. It's definitely working. And speaking of that, I want to bring that up. Let me see. I had that in my listing here. But Janet sent me. Okay, so let me pull this up real quick because we got about 20 minutes. So jobs blowout, what the employment report means for Biden and Powell. But let me see here. It says the U.S. economy generated 517,000 jobs in January, a surprisingly strong number that underscores the remarkable resilience of the labor market, but could stiffen the Federal Reserve's determination to squeeze the economy to fight 40-year high inflation. The unemployment rate fell to 3.4%, the lowest in more than half century. Okay? Well, you listeners, it's not half a year or a year or a decade or so, half century, the Labor Department reported Friday. The number blew away the Wall Street consensus of 190,000 jobs and suggests that the Fed's efforts to cool the labor market by hiking interest rates at the fastest pace in decades are not yet having the desired impact. President Joe Biden celebrated the report as evidence the economy is continuing to hum along, and the number is likely to blunt attacks from Republicans over the administration's spending policies. But senior officials in the West Wing were privately hoping for a less robust number. So was Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Here's how the number is likely to play with four key political and economic figures. Biden, the White House can view the report as evidence that economists, predictionists of an imminent recession are off base. But inflation is Biden's biggest enemy on the economy, and the report will cause some unease within the administration, given that it could mean the Fed will crack down harder on growth to curb prices. So with that being read, there's more to it. It just quickly says, still the report clashes with the expectations of many economists and Wall Street CEOs that the U.S. will fall into a recession this year. So with that being said, that's kind of funny to me. It's like they were hoping this would happen. Am I correct? They were hoping it was going to happen. These are their expectations, but it didn't. Am I correct?
Right. It's not. I mean, it's not happening because – you know, you're at a tricky time, okay? When the economy's bad, you know, sometimes the interest rates, I mean, not the economy, I'm talking, when the job rate is bad, like in the 6%, right? Say we had 6%, but the interest rates are low, you know? Now you got your interest rates are going up and your job report is low, you know, it's at 3.5%. Whatever it is, you know, it's kind of hard to balance because guess what? There's a product wise, you know, people are, you know, we need product and you can't get it because there's a high demand for certain products, and there's a high demand now for the job market, because guess what? Those jobs, those tech jobs, those cats, there's 7 million jobs out there that people have not even applied for.
Mm-hmm.
The people are walking off the job. They're looking, they say, where are these guys at? Well, those are those manufacturing jobs that are open, those jobs that they told you in high school not to take. And now those jobs are coming back. Now they want to put mechanics back in the high school. They want to put carpentry and plastics and all these
mm-hmm.
different electronic jobs back into the high wood shop, all of them. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because you got rid of it, you know, and you privatized everything, but that ain't working out. And those are
mm-hmm.
good jobs. You told everybody to go to college. Everybody ain't meant to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nothing wrong with that,
thank
too.
You.
And guess what they're paying? They're paying $30 to $35 for where companies will teach you how to work on circuit breakers. They'll
mm-hmm.
they'll send you to school. They got a sister
mm-hmm.
in Philadelphia, got a whole company. They say, how many workers you need? She said about 15, close to 20. And she said, I
you
can't
know, it's funny that you
apply.
Said that because it's funny that you said it because I was listening to a person the other day that said, there's jobs out there. It's just who wants those jobs. There are trades, you know, that you can learn that are definitely needed. People, I mean,
yep.
if you have an air conditioner or you have a heater, you're going to need a repair at some point. And those type
mm-hmm.
of jobs are out there. And there's a lot of training out
yeah.
there. But some folks are like, oh, I don't want to be dealing with that. And going back to another thing that you said, go to college to study what?
Mm-hmm.
Medicine. Be a lawyer, be everything. Oh, yeah, well, you know, because there's always going to be a need for more lawyers because we're getting more criminals. Yeah, okay, so what everybody else is going to be? You know, not
well,
everybody going to be a lawyer. Just like, it's just like, it's just like, excuse me, I said I wasn't going to interrupt. I hope you guys don't, and then I'll finish. I'm just saying that not everybody can be a pro athlete. Not everybody can be a movie star. But you know what? There are some people who do have certain jobs that are much happier and making decent money, living a decent life, not, you know, trying to be something that the market is probably already over and saturated with. But you can get a decent job and maybe move on to something else, you know. But like Timon just said, there's a lot of jobs out there, and there's a lot of companies that are willing to train. They're willing to spend the money, where other folks would rather get a student loan and go to college and then can't get the job in the field that they went to college for and then owe a student loan. Go ahead.
True. But
well,
what I was saying was I didn't go to college. I took some college courses, but I didn't go to college. But when I left my job and I was working in electronics and manufacturing, I myself, without any overtime, could do over $70,000 a year. So they were paying back then. That was 2009. So I know they're paying even more now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know that immigration thing you keep hearing about? Okay. Then tell Republicans, as well as Democrats, quit asking for that cheap labor. You
mm-hmm.
see, because that you want
Hello.
That immigrant to come across here, and when that immigrant comes,
mm-hmm.
that's why you have them out there. If you try to get an American to go out there and pick them vegetables and berries and all that stuff, you're gonna have to pay them at least $35 an hour. You're gonna have to have a union, and you're going to have a good medical department. They've got to have good medical. For them to do that job, and they don't want to pay. You can go far back as the Gilded Age. They've never wanted to pay the American worker. They care more about their shareholders than they do
That's
the
right.
American worker.
The bottom
That's
line is, if you ask an American, black or white, Hispanic or whatever, they grew up in America right now, hey, I got a job for you. You do? Yeah. You're going to go out here in this field. You're going to pick these fruits and vegetables. And they're like, wait a minute. I'm going to do what? You're going to pick these fruits and vegetables. You need a job, right? Yeah, I need a job. Okay. You're going to pick these fruits and vegetables. And, how much am I getting paid? Oh, well, based on the weight of the basket, we'll determine that when you bring it in. You know what they're going to say? Guess my pass. That's what they're going
to
say.
And what you say to them is you don't know if you like it until you try it.
Amen.
But Mike, if you're paying, look, but see, with us, with Americans, they're not dumb. Americans, and did their research, they know. Guess what? That's a $35 an hour job. If not, you think somebody going to go out there and go against the elements, and you're not going to pay them? That's why you don't see Americans doing it. That's why they bring those people who are in those trades. That's why I always, when people complain about immigrants, I'm afraid, do you actually think somebody want to pack their children up and cross a river to come over here? We control what's going on in their country. And by guess what? They ain't got no unions. They ain't got no unions over there. Them people really would love to stay where the hell they are and make good money. But guess what? People have cut deals with the United States. And you ain't going to make that kind of money.
Well,
you're gonna
go it's also...
It's not gonna happen.
Time, and it's also image. We're so busy stuck on image as far as where we work and what we're doing for work. I get 27 years as a police officer. I've been working as a plumber and electrician since I retired, going from locking you up for having crack to showing my crack. And I'm loving it. And I make a hell of a lot more money now than I did with all my years on the police department.
And I've worked with the brother. I've actually worked on some stuff. He hired me, and I worked with him. And I remember one time, Crenshaw, where you went to put in a dishwasher for a customer, right? And let me tell you guys something. He said initially he wasn't going to do it. But since a friend of a friend said, well, they only trusted his work and everything, and I think it was like, I don't want to put out your dollar signs, but it was a good amount of money, right? And I'm like, okay, he said, well, Mike, you want to ride with me down here? I said, okay, because we just came off another job where we were replacing cabinets in the kitchen. And get down there. It didn't take no more than 20, 25 minutes to put in that dishwasher. I'm sorry, it wasn't a dishwasher. A garbage disposal. No more than 20, 25 minutes. Now, I can say it was over a $100 bill. But 20 minutes and you make that type of money? Now, think about it. If some young kid learned the simplest thing of doing that and do it 2-3 times a day, you got 300 plus in your pocket.
Yep.
Because people don't want to read the instructions and try to do it themselves. They rather pay somebody else. They don't.
Now, they used to ask what happened to the black father, okay? The black father, the black family was destroyed right after they killed Martin Luther King. By 1970, the black man was out of work. He was not getting up. We black men were coming out of World War II as well as coming out of high school with a vocational license to either be a chef, electrician, a carpenter, a mechanic. They were creating their own businesses. Black families were strong. Then you brought in all this stuff that you, once you ran him off, you brought in all this welfare and you tried to blame black folks being on welfare. That wasn't true. It was white folks who were on
black
more
folks,
welfare.
Right. I know.
Than black people.
That's what it was.
You messed that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to turn around and privatize. You took all those out of the high school, and then you want to turn around and privatize the very schools. You know, teaching when the dude was learning it in high school. That's why people were having families so young. Dudes, remember, the average age of a construction worker 20 years ago was 19 to 21 years old. He is 28 to 30 now. That's how old he is.
Okay.
You didn't have to.
I can agree with that.
You could have went right out like you said.
I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
you know, it's just the things like what Officer Crenshaw just said, though. You know, I mean, because I've worked constructions. I've worked with, Janet knows it, I've worked with major construction companies. I even had my own business by a fluke, to be honest. It was really a fluke. I said, hey, you know what, I want to do my own thing. I just went and got myself a business license as Michael Gay, doing business as EQ Interiors. Just a fluke. And I went on a job site and asked them, who's doing your drywall? They said, nobody. You want to do it? Turn around. I met a guy through one of my brothers who had a Hispanic crew. And all I had was a business license. I never had to put any money up front. The building I was working on was the art gallery of Chris McNair. What's the McNair name mean? If you think about it, the bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, at the church, one of his daughters was killed in that. You guys know that whole story. Been movies and TV shows about all that. And all right. Mr. Mack was cool. And they fronted the material for the drywall and the drywall. They fronted it. I didn't have to pull nothing out of my pocket. We came up with an agreement of so many dollars a board, $25 a board to be hung. And this is a big unit. Never had to pull a dollar out of my pocket. And so what had occurred, and just to make a long story short, because we're getting to the top of the hour, but we have to get back into that. But the thing is that where I could get draws, and draws mean, you know, not draws like you put on your body, but draws for the labor and pay my guys. Every Saturday, Sunday that they worked weekends, the Hispanic guys, I would go to McDonald's and get them breakfast, bring it over there, made sure their cooler was full of water and sodas and all that type of stuff. I never touched the job. Never. And Mr. Mack paid me in cash money. I didn't question it. I remember being handed, you know, $1,000 with the wrapper still on there. Didn't have to count it. Do you want to count it? I said, no, sir. That's what was happening then, okay? And the reason why I share that is that where, you know, you can start a business. You can be a person who can do something of where you really don't have to be a business person. Just know the job. You can hire folks. Start your own thing. And that's what I did on a fluke. And I never had to do any work physically. I just came up with a name, opened up a bank account, got a business license, and found some folks who needed work. I was the not the middleman, I guess. Well, in a sense, between the client and the workers. You follow me? I was kind of like the middleman. But they were happy with it. They did the job. The building is still there, you know. But the
and
sad
that's
thing is
we
that
have
we're.
To get...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I'm saying that's why we have to get out of that stigma of if we go to school for this, we go to college for that, that's the only field we want to work in. You never know if you like it until you try it. It's a lot of things that we've done that we said we would never do that we continue to do today because we like it, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And I'll leave that there.
But you can experience certain things, and to be honest, you can experience certain things, and whether you like it or not, you're learning something to go forward with in your life. Yeah, just like you just said,
but Mike, it was like you said, if you're looking at image will make you broke. You got people
true.
Who looked at things in a certain way, you know, and did not want to have a certain job. Like, remember, what did they change the trash man to? A sanitation engineer.
Yep.
The name.
Okay, you got guys
right.
out there, man, that do some. You ever see that one little show where it's called the the what is that? The dirtiest jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And them cats are going in sewers and all that.
The show is back on. The show.
And he was the dude I saw on CBS. He said that they're paying them cats anywhere from $80,000 to $150,000 a year to do those types
and
of
things. And the show is coming back on. The show is coming back
that's
on.
That's what I'm saying, Mike. He was on CBS, and he was talking about that there are 7 million jobs out there. All right? There are 7 million workers out there who are not working. Well, what are they doing? A lot of them are sitting at home. They don't know what to do with their life. These are grown. These are men. And they don't want those. I mean, they aren't taking those jobs. But those jobs are there. If you're bringing back manufacturing, okay, and you're going and you're going to make sure that these people, you're going to also, that sister that had that business in Philly, she said, we will train you ourselves and pay you $30 an hour and give you medical and retirement benefits. So you got to bring that back because now it is the time of the employee. You got to take care of your people. It's a prime thing. Take care of your people, and your people will take care of you. Shit on your people, and your business is going in the toilet. It's just that simple. Good management will go a long way.
Right. But let me do this real quick because the time is 7:01, and I'm looking at the board, making sure that our scheduled guests are popping up here. And we're on schedule here because this is going to be an interesting conversation. So we are going to have to switch gears. But, yeah, we have to keep that topic going about, you know, it's great that the job market is what it is. But then again, you have to look at where, you know, who are getting these jobs. You know, it's kind of sad because where I work, I've seen where people have advanced into certain positions, and they jeopardize their jobs by stealing on their jobs. I've seen folks who get a promotion, and then all of a sudden find out, you know, they're not here anymore. Why? They were stealing, huh? It's like, what? You applied for a better pay, a position, and now you're going to steal from your job? That's a different story for a different show, because I was really in awe when I heard that, and I've heard that many times, but we'll talk about that probably next week. I want to take a quick music break just so that we can all take a breath and do whatever you want to do, because I'm just giving our callers, our guests, a chance to get on the board here. So wait a minute, I'm looking in the chat room, so hold tight, everybody. Timon, I know you have a limited time that you can hang with us. I truly appreciate you every time you're here. Where'd it go? Oh, here it is. I think I got it right. Okay, so we're going to take a quick music break. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the TMGN Network. We'll be right back.
Just that one right here.
You know what? I'm actually tired of this love cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
First we argue, then we cool. It's crazy. To be real with you, baby, I just don't want to do it anymore. My love is gone. Yeah. Call it what you want, but I may walk. Yeah.
Girl, you wondering how you can get me back, baby. Cause I've been gone too long, and it's driving you crazy. Oh, how you will miss my love. Honey, why did I leave? You knew I had to go. I see you think it's funny.
What are you supposed to do without me in your life?
wanna be with
love is a evil.
Love wasn't meant to be just a fantasy. Cause my love is a wall. So don't you come close to me. You're never gonna be with me. Quite the same. Instead of sunshine, there's always rain. And in your heart, there's so much pain. And what's left over is broken remains. So you call me time and time again, wondering if our love has a second chance. Cause there's nothing like to feel good loving right. And I bet you can't sleep at night.
What are you supposed to do?
What's up, y'all? This is St. James, and you're listening to TMGS, The Michael Gay Show. Tune in every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for interesting topics and awesome music. Now, back to the show.
Thank you, St. James. I appreciate that. Hey, you guys, welcome back to the TMGS. It's The Michael Gay Show on the TMG and The Michael Gay Network. Our next topic is about being in the music industry. And it's about being with a music label or being independent, being an independent artist. That's been really an interesting thing that I've talked to some other folks about, certain artists about. So I said to myself, why not get some on the show? Now, granted, last Saturday, I really had planned on having this topic for last Saturday, but with the events that happened with the officer, the Tyree case and everything, I rescheduled it for this Saturday. But right now, I'm happy and thankful to have a gentleman that I really love his music. I really respect him, and he has a lot to share with us regarding the industry. He works very hard, got some fantastic music, producer, writer, arranger, singer. Mr. St. James is on the board. So let's welcome St. James to the show.
Michael, you know how to make a man feel good. That thing is killing me. What's up, bro?
St. James. What's up, my brother? How you doing?
Hey, I'm blessed, man. Just, you know, hey, anything above ground after 50, man, is a miracle. So these days, so I'm blessed, bro. Yes, sir.
Amen. Amen. You definitely got that right. You know, I'm gonna turn 61 next month, and it's so funny. It's so funny how certain things happen to you for a reason. And I'm starting to reflect on where what was said earlier in the show, and I said, you know, that's funny you said that because someone said that to me, you know, and now you just said something to me, which made me think about what someone said to me just yesterday about age. He was telling me, and this is a customer, he telling me, hey, man, he asked me, how old are you? I said, I'm 60. I'll be 61 next month. He said, let me tell you something. My wife said, here we go. And he went into this whole personal story, you know, and shared it with me. And I'm like, what do you think about it? You know, he said, what do you think about that? I said, hey, man, you know, you just got to pray about it, you know, and, you know, do what you got to do. Because I can't, you know, I don't know him, just out the blue. But anyway, but this is so interesting when things happen in a way. I guess there's some certain spirit that's moving through the air. But thank you for joining us again. The music industry, the major labels, and being independent. I looked up last night, and I remember when there was many of the labels out there, but there's what they call the big three, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the big three would be Sony, Warner Brothers, and you guys, if you want to take the time, go ahead and look it up. And I think the other one is, I think it's CBS. I have to go back and look.
I think it's Universal.
Universal, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so, Sony, Warner, and Universal, right. The
Universal.
Big three.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When there was tons of labels back in the day, but all these conglomerates bought up all the little labels, right? And then you shared with me something interesting that I want you to share with everyone that's listening about being an independent artist, dealing with being an independent artist and dealing with these iHearts and these Spotify's and everything with your music.
Right.
What do you think, or what do you think is the best route? Being with a larger label like some artists are, or just staying by yourself and having control yourself? Because being with the major labels, yeah, you get worldwide exposure, allegedly. Okay. Allegedly,
right,
you get
right.
worldwide exposure. You know, because I had a discussion with a person I've known that's been in the industry for many years, but some folks say that's not always necessarily true. So what's your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I think is, and I'm going to try to be brief, but it's just, it's not a black and white yes or no. It's just so much gray and layers to this industry and business, because people think, you know, they just hear a record and all of a sudden they don't understand the journey to make a really hit song, and then what goes on after the record is a hit and it gets exposure, and then that's when the real battle starts with all I wrote, I produced, and you're just dealing with all the drama with everybody just wanting a piece of it like anything else. You see a pot of money sitting in the middle of the street, and it may not be yours, but if other people digging in it, all of a sudden it's like get on the bandwagon. Everybody, you're going to go on there and try to grab some for yourself. So I think it's just hard to really get into what's better. But I think ultimately you got to understand what's going on. Why are there only three major labels? Because everything in America is about monopolization. It's about it's corporate greed, monopolizing situations, and being the top or the number. We compete on that level in this country because we're a capitalistic society. That's trying to find a socialism balance, because people are poor and out of control with a lot of impoverished situations. So the industry has taken away residual income opportunities for people in the industry. Now, let's think about it. Most of the people that are in the music business are African-American. That is like everybody wants to be a rapper, singer, producer, videographer, something, a model, dancer, twerker, whatever the hell they want to be. But nobody's talking about being doctors, lawyers, scientists, master physicians, professors. You know, none of that's going on like it used to be. Not that people aren't doing it, but everybody wants to be an influencer to all that stuff. So They figured out how to take away our earning power. 20 years ago, you made a CD. I don't care if it was some crap. You can at least sell them out the trunk of the car, your backpack, and make and eat. I did for like 5 years on the road just trying to make money. I would literally have press up some stuff. I know what the best quality of music, the mixes weren't superb and all. I did the best I could, but people supported you because you had a product to sell. So so many things going on. So I think ultimately a major label is equivalent to a loan shark in the end. And on, not only them, they take your, they want you to pay them back more than what they've lent you, and then they still, and if you don't, they take your soul. They'll take your life or take your soul. So I can go to the to a bank if I'm smart and take care of my business and get the same, get the money I need to finance my stuff as an independent. Then I'll be obligated to the industry's expectations, the labels, BS, and the politics that they play. Or I can sell my soul and my music and give up my first couple of projects to the majors. And if they're really superb products, which those labels have the budget to make sure they kind of force you to end up having quality product, because they're typically not going to put out nothing that ain't going to make them money back immediately. So they know, they kind of know, and they've been doing it so long and gaming people so long that they have a formula that is proven to work. So they're not going to waste their money unless they got a lot of motive behind why they do what they do. So, I mean, I can go on and on with tell you, but ultimately, man, I love being an independent artist because I can do what the hell I want to do. Now, it's a price to pay for that. That means I got to get up early when everybody else sleep, and I got to stay up when everybody go back to sleep if I want to succeed. Mm-hmm. So I sleep when I'm in a casket. But that's the kind of attitude. You got to be driven. Girlfriends, wives, kids, all that stuff got to take a back seat to this, in the sense of because everybody in your life wants you to pay, give them, they want things, money, stuff, bag, purses, whatever. Everybody wants something if you're going to make money doing music. But nobody wants you to sacrifice what it takes for you to put in the effort and the work ethic and the time to get to that level. So at the end of the day, man, you got to make a choice. What are you willing to do? Do you want to be told what to do, or do you want to struggle to be in control of what you want to do? And at the end of the day, that's just kind of preference. But some people like being bossed around, told what to do, led around, navigated and controlled. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's like a relationship. Some women like a bossy, a dominant man. Some women want a man they can dominate. So it's to each his own, in a sense. And so you kind of have to go that way. But stripping that all away, bro, at the end of the day, the music industry is not catering to the African-American, because like anything else in America that's racially biased, discriminant, and socioeconomic disparity all up in it, why would the music industry be different? Black people been tap dancing and singing a sambo since slavery. So, you know, they know that about us. So they know that so all the industry to me is a slave ship. Like metaphorically speaking, it's a slave ship, and we're all chained to it because we love music. It's in our it's in our DNA, bro. Drums, from drums to the melody. It's all in our culture. So, if white America to me has understood that about black people, we'll tap dance and sing song and dance with a cheesy smile in a minute. So why would they not take the energy of that, of artistic creative and artistic ability, and capitalize off of that to the point where they're actually oppressing and suppressing us in this dynamic? We kill each other over the music. We dangle people from balconies over records, over the industry and the money that, and the entertainment and the fame that comes with this business. So it's like, we got to strip all that entertainment value away and an artistic value away, and look at it for what it really is, bro. This is basically slavery, economic slavery. Right. Based upon the fact that they understand that the pulse of African Americans is music, it's art,
right.
It's dance, it's visual.
Right.
So that's what they're doing.
Right. Right. I think you made that very clear. I probably and drop mic. no, I mean, you're on point. You're definitely on point. Just drop mic. You're definitely on point. Because as I said, I know. Fortunately, and I've been blessed to know many people who've been in the industry for a long time, and some that are coming up. And this is the reason why I want to do this show, because I know you're independent, but I know some people who say that, well, you know, you might want to do it for a major label. Again, you got the big three. What I find interesting is, and I was trying to put together how I want to say this, but when you look at Michael Jackson, his beef with Sony Music, you look at Prince, his beef with Warner Brothers, they're gone.
Of course.
Now, I'm not into conspiracy theories that much, but think about it. They're both gone. I'm not blaming the labels, per se, but doesn't that kind of make you think that's kind of odd? It wasn't just natural death. It was based on, and both were from alleged drug overdoses, or what was reported as. You look at Tupac, you look at Biggie, two of the biggest rappers, East Coast versus West Coast. They're gone. Those were murders. And there was nobody arrested for the killing of either one of those, per se. I mean, you know, when another thing, and I want you guys to, whatever, and elaborate on that, because those are my thoughts. And I want to let all the callers and everybody here ask you some questions and share their thoughts. But what gets me now is that where you can go to Walmart and there's still CDs being sold. There's still albums being sold. They're doing them on special wax, different color waxes and everything. Basically, it's not the newest artist. Sometimes some artists will make a deal with Walmart or Target, right? You've seen that. Exclusively at Target, exclusively at Walmart, get this album. And then another thing that gets me is that when you're inside some of these stores, that's the only music you hear. You don't hear the new artists, right? You don't hear new music in a lot of these stores. You hear old school, in which these labels own all that music. Somebody getting paid somewhere down the line.
Of course.
Am I right or wrong?
Of course, they're all getting paid. Absolutely. They're all getting paid, but that's business. We are caught up in the art. The artists, everybody's caught up in the it's nothing new under the sun of it all, honestly, because it's like anything else in politics. We wait for the election day to vote for the president, but white America votes in the midterms and the prior, you know, we're just waiting for the on president. Only time we vote as a whole, most of us, is when it's time to get a bad Republican president out of office and when we want to put somebody we think going to do better. But it's really
right
in between the lines where it matters. Politics. So it's like what I'm saying is that we are always a step behind what's really going on and everything that's going on in this country because we're 400 or 500 years behind the systems, the systemic situations that are already in place, even though and every time they – act like they're giving us something. It's like the back end interest. You think you're getting something up front, but by the time you pay it back, you really owe more than what you borrowed. So that they've been doing that to us.
Now let me ask you this, St. James. I got to ask you this. You and I had a conversation that you don't mind sharing. You were telling me, and I know you've been nominated as Artist of the Year of independent labels. A lot of folks out there don't know even about the whole thing that happens that's not mainstream, okay? You've been recognized as an artist, as a writer, as a producer. Your music has been on Spotify and everything. You share with me the fact that here's your music being shared on Spotify, and you haven't got a dime out of that.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Man, first of all, then when you start getting frustrated and angry about it, you can't even be emotional and vulnerable in this country anymore. We've gotten desensitized to other people's situations to the fact of no empathy. So lack of sounding whiny, but the reality is, man, you have no control over your music on those streaming platforms no matter what you think you do. You might get a couple bucks, but I did 76 million streams, 51 points. Total life on my Spotify account, I have 76 million organic streams. They verified it in a rap. They send you the numbers out every year, how many streams, how many listeners, all this crap, and you use it and you show off or whatever. That's what people do. I got so what I'm saying is they gave me 51.7 million streams this for 2022. I ain't seen a dime from 51.7 million streams, not a dime. And see, the thing of it is, they wait till it's time to pay out to say, oh, you have artificial strings on your thing. They like, you buy a string. First of all, you don't want to buy bots and fake strings because they master the ability to detect that, and anybody that's smart knows that. So I ain't about to spend thousands of dollars on streaming and know that I could jeopardize all that money and my platform because I'm artificially streaming. But since Spotify is a Swedish-based company, they don't have any jurisdiction. America has no jurisdiction over Spotify, just like they don't TikTok. That's why all the big hubbub about TikTok being banned and how it's different in China, where China's doing more educational stuff, and we just vegetables content. The stupid, doofy
right,
stuff.
Right, but can I ask you this? What do they mean by artificial streaming? So the listeners and everything. What does that mean?
Okay, an artificial stream is where a bot, like a fake stream that you didn't actually stream. No one's actually literally listening to you. I mean, there's just applications and artificial intelligence type, computer generated streams because everything that comes out there's hackers and people that know how to backdoor and break. Remember the iPhone, jailbreak the iPhone. It's the same thing with music, man. This game is crazy. If you have a hacker that knows how to artificially stream, you can pay some. That people are having, they create businesses that say we want to be a third party person to help you boost your numbers, and because everything's about how many followers, how many streams, how many listeners, how many views, all that crap. That's became what the industry is, less about the quality of the music and more about how the numbers and the popularity, which is stupid. When you strip it down, because if you're making whack music, how the hell you expect to get popular if your music ain't good? But then if your music good, you still don't get popular because people don't care about about your music. They care about I'm talking about the industry too. They only care about how you're looking on Instagram, YouTube. Not that he got a hot record, and maybe with us giving him a budget, it can be even hotter, or we can capitalize off of the situation now that he got it to this point. So it's just so many layers to it. But at the end of the day, Spotify. The fake streaming is basically if they detect that you're streaming and how it is, and how ain't no way you're gonna say I got a million streams in 2 days as organically. So, because what happened is if a song is 4 minutes long, 4 minutes long, and you just stream that song 10 times in 4 minutes, that's impossible. That's a fake stream. That's fake streaming where you stream the song more times than it's humanly possible. Within the time frame that the song is actually last of the song. So if a song is 4 minutes long, and then on this one song from the same person, it says five plays in 4 minutes, it's impossible because you're going to do one play every 4 minutes if it's a 4 minute record. That's how they detect fake streaming. So once they so what happens is the loophole is because they're an international company. We can't control their bottom line. That's why back when Joe Rogan did the whole N-word thing and NERE and all them people started pulling their music off of Spotify and everything like that, that was the opportunity for us to have some, really make some damage to Spotify. But now you see they're hosting the Super Bowl and the Grammys and stuff. I mean, they're getting bigger than they deserve to be. So what's happening is they can just say that your streams aren't organic, so we're just going to – they don't give you proof. They don't send you a report. They don't give you any kind of dialogue or respect or notice. They just can take your stuff off and accuse of that. Because if I got 51.7 million streams that you verified as a company, but then you later turn around when it's time to pay me and say, oh, well, we detect artificial streams, so we're not paying you for any of the streams. Like, okay, if some of them false, then don't pay me for the ones that ain't real. But don't not pay me for all my streams because you detect some artificial streaming. Because guess what? The artist has no control over their streams. Like if I'm paying somebody to boost my stuff, that's still part of the game. I mean, it's possible. But let's be clear. All them streams aren't fake. And what happens is somebody can take one of my records, put it on a fake playlist, and purposely bot my song just to get me banned off of Spotify, because that's what the industry is doing. That's what R&B artists and rap artists do. People doing that as an industry. Back in the day, remember when artists they would shuffle artists so he won't be hotter than they artists already out, so they would sign him just so he could put his music out. I mean, doing the same thing with streaming. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I could be here all day with the layers of BS, man, that's going on. But at the end of the day, these companies are getting away with keeping people's money. If I put my music on your platform, I should get paid no matter who the hell's streaming, fake or real. That ain't got nothing to do with me if I have no
right.
I'm not purposely spending money to do it. How can you say that?
Okay,
crazy,
so
man.
so let me interject for a moment there, because now
okay.
that's interesting right. because I do have some individuals who I invited to come on. And by the way, if you want to chime in and join the conversation and share your, you know, how you do things as far as your music, your artistic music, how you share it with everyone, whether you deal with a major label or independently through Spotify, through whatever form, go ahead and hit the number one. I'll open up your mic. I did have I had a couple of gentlemen scheduled. One, I'm trying to reach him right now. He responded just a moment ago and said, okay, he'll be on shortly because he has been with a major record label. He is a songwriter, producer, wrote many of the hits for like The Whispers and performed in the studio for groups like Shalimar and oh, Lord, the list goes on and on. So hopefully he's going to be able to chime in shortly. I want to go to the board. I'm sure some of you have some questions for St. James. Go to the lady of the house first. Janet, do you have a question or comment?
I'm sorry.
Nope. You were on mute.
I
know.
I was on mute. Well, the only thing I was thinking of when you were talking, St. James, was about back in the day, a lot of the artists used to get they would get a Cadillac and some money in their pocket, but the people who were producing and promoting them was the ones making all the money. And a lot of them mm-hmm. ended up going overseas because of that. So it's amazing mm-hmm. how it's similar happening still today.
Yes, yes, ma'am. And I believe the whole industry needs to, the whole model, business model of the music industry needs to be just dismantled and restructured. Like in the movie business, you can't just get out of jail. I mean, people get out of prison and just be say, I'm a rapper and singer and would be taken seriously. But you can't do that
yeah.
in the movie industry. You got to have a SAG card, be a part of the union, membership, pay for dues, and be a part of that network. Now, but in the music industry, there's no regulation.
That's sad.
Mm. Interesting. Let me see. Officer Crenshaw or Timon, you guys have any questions or comments?
I just want to tell St. James, thank you for what you do. I love it. The opening song that Mike played, I'm not wet today, but you know that's gonna come.
There he goes, Mike.
You know, he opened up the show with that. You know, that's
the show
is. You know, you never thought that an officer would make you laugh.
Oh, he's killing me.
You know,
every time I come on, he'd be like,
I love the fact that you're outspoken, you don't bite your tongue, and you want to do it for you.
Right.
You know, and that's a very rare thing today, because so many people bite their tongue for the industry to keep the money coming in. You know your money
right.
is going to come in. Your money going to come in just like Prince.
Oh.
It's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well,
hold on, I'm looking at the board here. I know that Ship is only has so much time with us. Ship, you have a comment too or a question?
What I was going to say, Mike, and St. James, I'm glad you're looking at it, because I'm, you know, being a stand-up comic and an actor and a writer myself, it's good you're looking at it from a business standpoint. You're not just looking at it as, because, you know, some artists would rather let someone else handle going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a lot of them
yes,
get burned, because they let somebody else deal with it, you know. But if they know what has happened to the people in the past, whether it's been Oprah who told Bill Cosby, you know, filled her in and let her know, hey, you got to count your money. You got to set your game plan up, you know, and look at it from a business standpoint to where you'll
mm-hmm.
know how to, you know, deal with it. Just now, you just can't be an artist. That's cool.
Right.
But if you create something and then all of a sudden you ain't getting no cut from it, you know, I mean, think about it. The Temptations, a lot of the originals, all of them died broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on and on. Mm-hmm. You got so many guys that they don't understand the business at all. And it's the mm-hmm. fact that you took control of your career and started setting the standards of what was going and what the intentions are going to be for your career. You know, you, hey, bro, I commend you because that's how more folks will be doing it.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
And by the way, I want to let people know that if you're listening in on the internet, I appreciate you. You can go to the chat room. Just take a second to sign up onto Blog Talk Radio and join us in the chat room. You can post your questions or comments there. I will read them over the air. And that would be www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS, www.radio.com/TMGS. Or you can call in if you're listening on the internet and you want to talk live to us. The number is 516-531-9861. If you happen to be on the board, all you got to do is hit the number 1 and I can open up your mic. All right, so, and, you know, in the music industry, it's kind of like the same to a certain extent in the movie as far as with the conglomerates, the major companies. As I said, I mentioned the big three in music, mm-hmm. which are pretty much the big three in movies, too. You mm-hmm. look at where, mm-hmm. you know, Dave Chappelle, they offered him $50 million, but they're going to make about $500 million, right? What do you think about that? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
like the same thing that the majors are doing to artists of saying, okay, look, because you know it sounds like a lot of money, but you don't know how much money the whole project, but your whole involvement really is going to generate, right?
Michael, there's so many layers of income. Like, people don't understand that a song represents 10 slices of one pie. So there's 10 streams of income that should be coming from one record if you do everything the way it's supposed to be done. For real. You're supposed to get 10 checks, technically, whether it's pennies or thousands. You're supposed to get 10 checks from one song if you own it outright and understand the business. It's a 10-slice pie. But people only get one or two slices. And then the other 8 is going either in escrow to, like, your performance rights organization, BMI, CSAC, ASCAP. People don't understand that while they out singing their songs in mom-and-pop shops or at bar mitzvahs or wherever the hell you're singing your music at, people don't even know they can get paid for performance. The reason that we sign up to BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC is for performance rights. So every time you perform something that you created, that you registered, you can now get paid if you perform it somewhere at a venue. People sit here on thousands of dollars mm-hmm. don't even claim it. So what happens is after the three-year statute of limitations, and after that money goes back to BMI, CSAC, ASCAP, or Harry Fox, mm-hmm. all the collections. They're sitting on mm-hmm. millions of dollars unclaimed royalties, man. It's insane because people don't know what the hell going on.
Wow. Millions of dollars of unclaimed royalties.
Millions, bro.
By the way, I had invited Bunny DeBarge back on. Janet, you remember Bunny had been on, and we were talking about a book. She shared a few other things. And initially, Bunny was going to come on last Saturday, but then she called me back today because I left her a message. And she said, Michael, she says, you know, I love you, but I don't really want to talk about this. She said, it just really bothers me. And I get it because – and I'm not putting words in her mouth, because when they did the Bobby DeBarge movie, they never came to her, asked her anything about her brother. I get it because she's never been paid a dime for the songs that she wrote and co-wrote that were sampled and used by other artists. Never got a dime. Think about it. You know the song called A Dream, that that song's been used in 3-4 different songs, and she ain't got a dime. But she said, Michael, she said, I'll come back on your show anytime, but not on that subject.
And I was just being very, I was thankful that she was just open and honest about it. I said, I get it. I understand.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because really, well, I'm sure that every time she hears that, and not just that one song, that there's been many others that she co-wrote or wrote, she's not getting any royalty checks. And that has to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, man.
And people are going to say that's new. And it's really old, you know.
Right.
It's an old group.
But it goes back to my point, Michael, about the need for legislation in the music business. And unfortunately, because it's such a multi-billion-dollar industry, who wants to change the narrative when the most of the money is going at the top? They don't care. They don't want to change the law. And if you start talking too much, they might get rid of you. That's real talk. That's why these rappers gone.
No.
These rappers are gone. Listen, all them rappers are insured. First, them label. I told you last time I talked to you. When you become a commodity to the major industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar conglomerate, you are now their property, boy. Whether you want to metaphorically understand it or not. So what happens is, if you're my property, I can insure my property. So if my property goes out to the bowling alleys, Takeoff. Why the hell are you in a bowling alley when you're rich, when you could be in a suite somewhere at the West End somewhere doing the same thing somewhere? I mean, just come on, man. So you die, they collect the insurance policy off your death, and they already know what the narrative is going to be. So it's all connected, man. Messy. They need to change the industry. We've got to change it, man. We got to blow it up and find legal precedent. If you can sue a company or organization for certain law, civil suits, it should be against the law. Musically, there's no consequences. If I sign a contract with you and I say, you know what, send me, we do all the work, do the music, we finish it, and then now I don't want to pay you, I can ghost you, and I'll spend $20,000 with an entertainment lawyer just to try to get the 15 that you owe me back. There's
right.
just no
right.
criminality to it. But you can't. But you go jaywalking across the street, you might lose your life in America.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Like I said, I invited three individuals on. I see a number here on the board, and I don't know if they can open up their mic. They can hit number one, and trying to see if the other one is going to be able to chime in. If I can get a couple of more minutes here on the show, I probably will. But you being independent, what's the benefit? I mean, well, you already said you're not being with the label, what the labels do. But what has been the good thing about you being independent? And unfortunately, I could not upload your new track. I don't know why.
Okay.
I'm having a little problem with
fine,
that
fine.
Talk because I didn't want to play it. She got
okay.
it going on. But, what is it? I mean, as you said, you did share. You said that where, you know, you wake up in the morning, do what you want to do, this, that, and the other. As far as your creativity goes, what would you tell a person who is a inspiring writer, musician, artist like yourself, of what path to go down and how to manage themselves and be wary of certain things?
It's hard to get it because we have a certain expectation of how a regular person don't know nothing about the business. We have a view of how we see the music business. People still believe that because they can sing, rap, dance, whatever, they're going to be a star, somebody famous. You might get lucky and become go viral and whatever, but being a Michael Jackson, a Whitney Houston, a Tupac, Biggie, somebody on a major level, Dr. Dre, or somebody else, that Jay-Z, Beyonce, those type of Drake, them type of stars are not commonplace any longer because so many people on the internet doing the same thing that this oversaturated industry, so only the cream rises to the top, or you get lucky, or you know somebody that knows somebody that puts you on. So I would tell them to manage their expectations for what their goals are. Now, if your goal is to be famous, then you got to be in it for the long haul. You're not going to get famous overnight. This is going to take years of work. Some people don't ever acknowledge for years in their craft, but they behind the scenes. Neo was writing for people way before you knew Neo as the R&B singer that he became and a star he got, and so forth and so forth. You hear those stories. Let us see. A lot of people, Angie Stone wrote for D'Angelo's first, when he first dropped that album. That was Angie Stone. All them songs were written by her. So, but D'Angelo got the fame. But the point of the matter is nobody knew who Angie Stone was until she, I mean, it's just that kind of progression. And so, but most kids
are doing this thinking they're going to go viral, be famous overnight, or make a lot of money. They got to know the truth first. But see, that's when the confusion between your craft and the art itself meets the business that you have no knowledge about. And that's why I really, I don't want to sound crazy, but it's just that frustrating and confusing because it's a conflicting web of BS that you got to figure out. So what I've come to the conclusion is I'm doing music for me and because people that really want to hear the style that I do. And I have no more expectations beyond that. And I want to get paid for the work that I do. And if I can't get paid, then it's my investment in my catalog and legacy when I'm out of here, my online content. And then I leave a catalog of music back, and you never know when something you did is gonna make get a movie or something like that, or become popular. Right. You don't know.
Right. I want to open up another mic here. I see a hand that's being waved, and I'm glad that you mentioned, because I read an article also. In fact, you shared it with me, and I want to. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna add another 15 minutes, you guys. I'm gonna open up this mic here. Because I want to read a little bit of that article that you sent me about the money making is not being an artist on the radio and everything. It's if you can get some music on a movie track or a TV show, you know, that's where some money is really being made. You look at individuals who are not artists. They're just producers, writers. They're the ones who are making money in the background. They don't have to be on the stage. So let's see, 770-4402. I'm going to book your mic. Hello, who's calling?
Hello. What's going on? It's Corey.
Oh, I know who it is now. You know what? I didn't see your hand wave. Hey, you guys, welcome. Oh, I apologize, my brother. Please welcome to the show. I'm glad that he chimed in. You know, I saw him there. You know, and then all of a sudden I looked down, somebody called me during the middle of the show, and I looked down and I looked away and I was like, who is this calling now? You know, but you guys, please welcome to the show. Great guy. I really appreciate him. He's been a guest on the show. It's Corey Williams, Corey D. Williams. How you doing, Corey?
Hey, how you doing, Michael? Better late than never, right?
Yeah, definitely. So what's your take on? No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You were speaking.
I was listening to what you all were saying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting commentary you got going there.
Well, thank you. And by the way, you guys, this is Corey Williams. You know his dad, Billy D. Williams. Corey is a funketeer, okay? He's a musician. He's got some great music. And Corey, you distribute your music, right, through different platforms or whatever. I have a lot of your songs and a lot of your grooves. What's your take on the major labels versus the independent? Obviously, you choose to be independent, but what's the benefit of you having control of everything that you do?
Well, I just want to say, you know, there's some huge differences. I mean, I've been in and out of the music business since the 80s. So, you know, there's a lot of changes that have happened, taking place since then. And like you were saying, you know, there's a huge, it's oversaturated. There's a lot of people putting music out, which makes it real difficult sometimes for you to stand out as an independent artist. Like, you have a label behind you, you got promotions, you got all these other things that maybe some money behind you. But as an independent artist, you have to get more creative. You have to try to use social media, the internet, things as tools to promote yourself. So, but the beauty of it is that we can, you know, because back when I got started in this, you know, all of this, you had to have a major label behind you, or there was just no way for you to get exposure. I mean, you selling, you know, cassette tapes out of the trunk of your car, you know, there was no way to have the internet. We didn't have all these different things, you know, at our disposal. So there's a lot of different things that have happened. There's some negative things about all that too, but on the other side of it, I mean, we're able to produce our own music, release it, and have people listening to it. I mean, the whole trying to make money off of it is a whole another side to it. But, you know, I think the most important thing too is that we all sort of, and if you're doing it, be passionate about it. You know, you got to love doing what you do, because more than likely there's probably not going to be a whole lot of money in it. So number one, I mean, you got to love it. I mean, I've been doing it forever and I've hardly made any money doing it. Cause I got in and out of it so many times, cause I had so many negative experiences. You know, I got signed by major labels, and some people, you can get signed by a major label and people will never even hear your stuff. I mean,
right.
They might sit it to the side for whatever reason. They might have other artists that they're making money off of. Like in my situation, Jeffrey Osborne's nephew, Joel Osborne, who sounded a lot like Jeffrey Osborne, you know, Jeffrey had a lot of hits. He and I had an ensemble together and we signed under the development deal under major label. And there was a merger and our deal got caught up in this merger. And all of a sudden, you know, they were making us all these promises and a lot of the stuff didn't happen because the merger happened and they just decided, well, we need to cut costs. And so we don't really need to develop any new acts. We can make money off of the Elvis's catalog or whatever, you know,
right.
On existing music. So, you know, there's all
right.
That's the other side of it. But, you know, and then, you know, also when you're dealing with being involved with major labels and things like that, a lot of times people want to have control over it, is what you do and how you do it even. So like they may say to you, hey, or, you know, we need this stuff that you're doing right now to sound more like Prince or, you know, more like whatever, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you run into that too. So, you know, for me, it's just been a joy to be able to create what I want to create, the way I want to create it, the way I hear it, and release it. And, you know, but, you know, my main goal has been pursuing sync licensing, which you brought up, which is why I hit the number one. I was like, oh, now they talk about something, which is, you know, getting you some stuff on a movie, a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way to really, that's a new way to sort of promote your material and make direct royalties, because, you know, you're registering the stuff in the BMI, ASCAP, whatever performing rights organization you belong to. And, you know, you get with a distribution company who will help collect your royalties for you. But, yeah, I mean, they have, you know, you trying to connect with music supervisors is a whole another side of the business now that is sort of like
exactly
new thing that's taken off.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah.
I don't want to cut you off because I'm sorry. Well, I am, but I apologize. But because I want to get one of your tracks in here. I want to get one of your tracks in here. I played St. James. I want folks to hear you if they haven't heard you before, if you don't mind, and then come back and let you finish up because Corey has some great music, and I'm looking at three songs. I'm trying to decide which ones I want to play. So I'm going to let you decide for me. The Deuce, Locomotive, or Cast Adrift. You know which one I like the most, but you tell me which one.
You play your favorite, you know, because, well, you know, I do a lot of instrumentals, and not everybody really gets into instrumentals either, you know, because I try to make tracks where the music is saying something to you and is interesting to listen to, because, you know, I come from a background of jazz and all types of music, but... Cast Adrift was one of the most popular ones, but probably, well, actually, the one that's gotten the most streams on Spotify is Peace of Mind, which I don't even know if you've even gotten hip to that one, but I released it as a single And a friend of mine who's a rapper, Drake Joma, wrote the lyrics and did the rap on it. But that actually came from a voice memo. So my father had sent this voice memo to me about peace, and I just had it for years, and then ran across it, and I was like, I got inspired to write a song.
Now, see, now you're making me feel bad because I don't have that on the board. I got it, but it's not on the board. I got it in my personal. Okay. I mean, I save all your stuff, but I didn't transfer it to the, you know, the Blog Talk board, the show board.
Okay.
But okay, so let me do Cast Adrift, and we'll come right back. Song. You guys, check this one out.
Okay. Yeah.
Welcome back to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live in ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. We're having a conversation with St. James and Mr. Corey D. Williams, and you just heard one of his tracks called Cast Adrift. Man, I love that track, man. That's awesome. That is awesome.
That
I love
dope.
That breakdown.
Super dope.
Yeah. I know the quality you guys can hear so clear over the show, but I recommend you hook up with Corey and check out his music, man. But that is a – put on your headphones when you listen to this.
Yeah.
And you hear that stuff move from left to right. You'd be like, oh, my goodness, where am I?
That's how it's supposed to be, baby. That's dope. Real
that's
dope, bro.
That's a project that I'm working on called Sonic Biotics. So that's what it's under. I have two different music projects. One is 3D Nucleus Project, and the other is Sonic Biotic. So that's that's basically a collaboration between a lot of independent artists. That was Kelly Mustard singing on that track. But I co-write and collaborate with probably 20 or 30 different artists around the world, pretty much, which is what technology is, one of the things technology allows us to do now that we couldn't do before either.
Right, exactly. And which, yeah, you had told me that, and I was like, really? I'm like, is that
yeah.
deep? I have to go ahead and let the co-host chime in. I'm sure they have some questions or comments. Anyone, if you have any questions or comments for Corey or St. James, please go ahead now. I added an extra 15 minutes to the show, so we should be out of here. Well, actually, extra 30 minutes, but we're not going to use it all up, I'm sure. But Janet or Crenshaw or either Timon, what's your question or comment?
Well, I'm going
to go there first.
No, go on.
Everybody was on mute, huh?
I'm going to jump in there first real quick. I am honored to be listening to the music from two wonderful artists that I can actually say I'm wet now from listening to both their music.
There you go. Man.
Both their music, dude, I'm going to... They just made my wife happy because she's going to have a good night tonight.
Watch out now, Crenshaw. Watch out now. Watch out now.
You might get arrested. Oh, Lord. Timon, what do you have to say?
Hey, I just want to commend the brothers for keep doing their work. You know, as an artist, and like I said, keep on fighting, keep writing, keep that imagination open, bruh. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay focused, because y'all day is coming. You're already doing great work. You know, you're doing your own thing. And, you know, William Bell, I'm a bass lover. So, hey, you know, I got Stanley going to do the music for my thing. So, hey, I'm with you all the way with your music, bruh.
Amen. From Brother Timon, I'm sorry, I should say Deacon Timon Ship. Thank you, Deacon.
Wow.
Janet.
Well, I too am enjoying the music, and I just want you guys to keep doing what you're doing because it's all going to pay off in the end.
Okay. Well, one thing, what we're going to make sure we do, I'm going to make sure of course, with their permission, I'm going to make sure that we make it a point to play their music here on this show. And I'm going to try to make sure that other shows on this network, and I also still communicate with other networks I used to be with, and recommend their music to play so people can hear it. That's the thing. People got to hear what's out there. You can't enjoy it if you don't hear it. Right. Again, as I said earlier, it's so amazing to me when you walk in the stores and you hear the music that's being played over the store PA or the store system. It's not the music of the 2000s. It's not really all that. It's a lot of them from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. So that should tell you something. At least it does me. Because you can't play the music from 2000s. Too much cussing going on and violence and stuff like that. And much of it, you know, it's too much of it. But there are artists like these gentlemen that are on with us right now. It's available. It's out there. You don't have to conform to what is popular among a generation, right? But even as generations change, there's still people making music, quality music. So I really appreciate both of you gentlemen. I want to get into this real quick. The movie thing, getting your songs to the movies. Can you guys share any experience that you've had or if that's what you're looking at? Because, as I said, I've read an article, and
St. James has sent it to me about that's where the money is. And to be honest, that makes a lot of sense.
You go ahead, brother.
Hey, that's all right. Okay. Hey, man, I got to say this while you're on the phone. I love your dad. Love your dad stuff, man. And I wanted to say this. You want my arm to fall off? That was my favorite line of Lady Singh's Blues with your dad. He killed that, boy. But anyway, I digress. But, yeah, I love Billy Dee.
You know what's up.
All right. So I've had some, Michael, I had some good experiences with place. I had a couple of placements overall back in 2009, Not Easily Broken. My song was on that trailer when Taraji Henson and Morris Chestnut, that movie with Petey Jakes produced. Back door on that, man. It made the trailer of the movie. It was one of those songs I would have never picked, but you just never know what record they're going to use. So that happened to me.
Right.
And then I had some connections with the Equalizer, the first Equalizer movie. My man Jabari Ali was the music supervisor for Equalizer, the first movie. And so, but what's going on that, and then the second one was in France. So it was a lot of French rappers. They gave them $100,000 per placement for some French rap songs that nobody even heard of. So you just never know what the music supervisor, the producer, or the director is going to want for their music and placements and needle drops or scoring. So it's so much money to make, but you got to, it's still the same politics. You got to know somebody that's the supervisor that knows somebody. It's the same stuff.
Yep.
So go ahead.
Yep. That's all really, really true stuff. I mean, it is in the end, you know, all about who you know. A lot of people think it might be easier for me because my father is already, is a celebrity. But it's not really. I mean, I'm involved in a whole different industry. People hit me up and go, well, why don't you become an actor? You know, I never been interested in acting. I've always been a musician since I was about 12 years old. I started writing my first song. So, you know, I've been into music all my life. So, yeah, it is all about who you know. You know, that's a big part of it. You know, I was on one of these webinars, you know, for people who are trying to get into doing sync licensing, and they were talking about it, and they had a bunch of different music supervisors on there saying, well, how do you get, you know, here's what we look for, this is what you need to do to get, you know, just prepare your music, be into your thing, do your thing. That's what makes it stand out. You know, you don't necessarily have to make it sound like somebody else for it to work. They look for individuals. But yeah, they have lists of that you can, you know, you can solicit music to music supervisors, and then there's a few websites actually that do sync submission now. So they, you know, you just have to figure out which ones are the work for you and what's most legit. You know, sometimes they take people's money and stuff because these people
they charge
you to submit music.
Yep. And
but
crazy.
You know, there's a few legit ones out there, and they basically, so there's that, and then there's song libraries. So song libraries are like, you know, you submit music to them, and then they approve it, and they put it in as part of their library of music. So like, say you got a hip hop song or whatever, and then somebody's looking for this particular type of music with this particular mood, they may go through and listen to a bunch of songs, and yours might be one of them. You know, it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination. It's still challenging, like everything else. And like you were saying earlier, it's like, you know, you really got to, you know, you got to be into your thing, do your thing, do it to the best of your ability, and try to always improve, you know, get better at what you're doing. Yeah, I mean, there's opportunities there. You know, they have sites where, you know, some legit ones where you can where they tell you what kind of opportunities they have and you submit music to them. So I've done that some, and you know, I'm still waiting to see what happens, you know, if I get picked up. A couple of them are being considered for placement, you know.
Let me ask you something here that was really interesting what you said, Corey, though, is that where you said you have over how many people that you work with worldwide?
Well, I lost count at about 20 or so, but I think it's up to about 30 people, you know.
30.
And that's mainly.
How does that work, though? How does that work? Because the reason why I'm asking is because it's kind of interesting is that where, you know, if you go back in the day, it's like where, you know, these cats are going to record a song, you know, the band, whatever, or they would put together. Well, you know, they used to put together singing groups. In Vogue was a put together group. They had to come together, you know, all together in one spot, right? You put a band all together, you know, you got to go to the same studio and everything. You're recording here in the United States and you meet somebody over in Germany and you're able to put together this music. And then you get somebody over in Australia, you know, and they're able to collaborate with you. You know what I'm saying? Because like you said, that's the way technology is going. How did that all happen? And how does that, can you kind of explain for the listeners how that works now? Because that's really interesting. And my last part of it is that what's the process? Does it start off where here's your ideal, you send this bit over to them and then they do their part and then they send it back to you and then you say, okay, and I'm going to send this over to this person or, you know, just explain to us. That sounds really technically interesting.
Well, I would have to say first off, you have to find like-minded people to work with. Like you have to connect with people who are thinking in your direction. You know, that's the first step. That's the biggest step. So a lot of times, you know, if I'm connecting with somebody and they start talking to me about money before we even get to the song, I'm like, well, you ain't the right person. I'm not the one. You know, I need to talk to somebody else. But that's not important too, but you know, if you don't have a song, you ain't gonna make any money. So you know, it's just all about kind of connecting with the people who are like-minded, thinking about the same stuff, thinking in the same direction. Like Cast Adrift, for example. Like you know, a lot of these people I connect with through social media. So there was a drummer, Andrea Polosini, who lives in Italy. And he was the one that was playing that beat, the rhythm. So he had this rhythm that he was playing in a post on Instagram. I saw it and I was like, damn, that beat is infectious, it's tight. And so I reached out to him. I said, man, you know, you want to collaborate? And so he and I had been talking about doing stuff. And so he has his own studio. You know, he goes in the studio and cut stuff. And, you know, like a lot of people, that's another thing. A lot of people make money doing beats these days. I mean, they a ton of money. I mean, selling directly to people. Like, you know, you're not going to a company, nothing. I mean, they're just making beats, making packs, beat packs, loop packs, whatever else, and selling them on the, you know, making tons of money. So that's another thing. But yeah, I mean, I connect through a lot of people through social media. So, and, you know, he said he was down. And I said, look, you know, plus you got to kind of get together what you, on the business side of it, how you plan on, if it should take off, you need to have these things in place because, you know, last thing you want to do is end up arguing with people about money or suing people to get your money. But, you know, normally when I collaborate with people, I already have a deal up front. I know what I'm offering them. And I tell them what it's going to be up front, and then they can make a decision. And, you know, when I register copyright the songs, I give them their splits. You know, you register your songs with a split in there. So when the performance right organization collects for you, you know, you get your percentage of whatever the earnings are. But so that's the business side of it. So you got to keep that straight too. But on the creative end, I just look for like-minded people to create with, people who know what I'm doing, and we appreciate each other's artistry. You know, I'm a bass, you know, first and foremost, but I produce and write. So I'm basically a producer writer who plays bass, but you know, some people think I'm a bass player strictly because they see me playing bass, and you know, I've been playing bass for a lot of years, so I'm proficient at it, but always looking to expand, always looking to grow. But yeah, I mean, that's how it happened. There's another kid that I ran across who's in the UK, Meacham Zeus, he goes by, and he's in the funk, man. He's like a 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid who plays the heck out of a synthesizer, like, and real wow. funky dude. Like, he appreciates the old school styles and music. Like, I start throwing some songs at him going, here, you need to listen to this. He's going, yeah, I got that one. It's like, what?
I got that already.
Yeah.
You on the late train, my brother. I got that already. Right. I've been listening to that ever since I was 4 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, this is stuff I've been listening to all my life. So, you know, you got to be dedicated to it. You know, I've found other ways to make a living. You know, I've been a fitness trainer for 30 years, you know, because I was so disenchanted with all that crap. But now I'm sort of like, you know, when I got back into it this time, I said, I'm doing it for me. I want to do some music I really love and feel good about, enjoy, and hopefully it will find its audience, you know, and that's my approach. That's my attitude right now about creating music. I mean, it's not for everybody. Everybody's got, you got to find your own way. You got to find your own inspiration. All of that is very important. But you know, like he was saying earlier, it's like, if you're looking for instantaneous success, it's probably not going to happen that way. I mean, it happens for some people that way. The ones that get lucky, it's like hitting the lottery. You know?
Right. And then St. James, you've been doing this for many years too. You take, I mean, do you have the same feeling that where, you know, you doing it for you? I mean, of course you love what you do. You've written some great songs, mm-hmm. put out some great music. But what's your thoughts about what Corey just said as far as it's going to be about your love for it and the mm-hmm. money comes secondary? Or how do you view
that? Yeah,
well,
I agree with Corey 100% across the board, because it's just like anything else, relationships. And unfortunately, because you're virtual, I've met so many people from Europe, different countries over in the UK, I mean different cities and places in the UK, Asia, just different crazy places, in the Middle East, I mean, in France, I mean, just crazy. So you can meet people and touch people without even ever being in the same room and still make a hit record. It's just that easy now, virtually or otherwise. So I agree with all that part. But what I am focused more on is getting my money now. And what I'm saying by that is I'm not trying to get rich, but I'm not doing anything else for anybody else without my money up front, whether it's a deposit or or all in full before I touch a note or write a lick. Because what I'm saying to you is, at the end of the day, that's important as much as creativity. People wouldn't mess with you if they didn't think you would, if you have something that they wanted. Otherwise, you wouldn't be getting no interaction. So I think that's going to be established too. So for me, I want my money now. I've already done all that pro bono shit. Excuse me, I'm not doing it no more. Pro bono work.
I get it. Because I know you produce some artists that we've had, we've met on the show and everything. You shared some stories and everything. So, you know, yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. You know, you don't invest in a lot.
Yeah, but I think the collaborative effort that you can do in terms of meeting different people is an awesome experience, man, when it's done right, like he said. And then from his side of things, the creative side, making sure that he's got a hit record so we can make money is just as important as making sure we can, because you see what people keep leaving out of all of this is that damn engineer that charges you $300 for a 4-hour block, or that producer that makes that put together the mix, the master, all that crap. That's the money that people don't want to talk about. So that's why that stuff has to be established. That's why I'm talking about the layers of the industry. It's not just let's come together and make a record. Because once you do that, then all the messy stuff happens after, because especially if it becomes a sounds good and everybody's excited about the potential of the record, then we ain't take care of the business on the front end of it all. Now it gets messy. I wrote this. No, you didn't. It just gets intellectual property drama. That's the negative side of the coin, and that's the coin that I want to expose more of, because I think people are getting caught up in the music and forgetting about the journey of it. It's a messy situation because there's no regulation, no laws, no consequences, no criminalization of it. If you breach a contract with somebody, you should have repercussions. If you can jaywalk, if you can get a speeding ticket for going too fast, and you get some money coming out of your pocket that you must pay, or you got consequences, why can people get away with ghosting you reneging on contracts, breaching agreements, and you stuck with this music and all this time and energy put into it and cost with no consequences to the person that that got in bed with you with it. There's got to be something done about that now, man. No more of that.
Well, while we're talking about that, and we're sharing the music, and we've been sharing the music, I'd like for you and then Corey, tell us how we can hear your music, buy your music. Go ahead and tell us how we can contact you and get a more acquainted with more of your music than what we played.
Hey, Michael, real quick before I go, I appreciate everybody you letting me allow me to be on the show. I'm going to hang up after I drop this real quick. Thank you, Michael, for all you do and the topic of discussion, everything, having me on. Corey, maybe I need to hook up on social media, man. I'll get your information from Michael, and then I'll reach out to you.
Yeah. Absolutely,
okay.
Man.
And then, so for me, man, you can find me on my official website, saintjames.com, www.saintjames.com, my official website. I'm on all social media platforms, or just Google me, because at the end of the day, you know, you got to promote your own website officially, because that's where you want people to really find you the most, because social media has gotten to a place where they're actually stifling your content if people don't have the offensive content toggle hit. I mean, just a lot of games that Instagram, all them social media platforms are playing. So go to my website and email me if you want to talk to me. Thank you.
Amen. All right. Appreciate you. Everybody say goodnight to St. James. Thank you, St. James. Appreciate you, my brother. I'll be in touch soon.
Thank you so much. All right. Y'all have a good rest of your year. Happy New Year.
All right. All right. Thanks to St. James. Corey, please let everybody know how we can get a hold of your music.
Well, CoreyDWilliams.com, which is going to be launched very shortly, probably within the next week or so. Just did a rebuild of my site. Been working on a rebuild. So, but you can also catch what I'm doing on any social media platform. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. You know, look me up, Corey D. Williams, CoreyDWeE. And like I said, CoreyDWilliams.com will be up and running shortly. And to what he was saying, too, St. James was saying, it's like, yes, you gotta definitely get your agreements tight. You know, you got to know where you're going, what you're doing up front. Some people, require a fee for you to work with them. And that's a real thing. I mean, it just depends on how you want to do it. It's a personal preference. For me, at this point in my life, I tend to put my creativity out front, but it's not like that. You know, you can really ignore the business side of it. You have to stay on top of all that stuff too. It's just as important, if not even more important, if something should happen or take off. You know, you need to be covered.
Right.
But a lot of people, some people make a living doing it, and if you make a living doing it, it's important for you to get paid. You know, and some people, that's one of the requirements. You know, it just so happens that the people I work with, that's not typically how it goes. But you know, but then they all know me and they trust me, and you know, you have to be able to work with people you know and trust. Also, you know, that's important.
Right. And you know, I agree, because see, here's the thing that people ask me, that. Do you make money off of this radio show? No. So why are you doing it? I'm like, well, I enjoy it. And here's the crazy thing about it, and I've shared this story with people before in the past, and they still don't get it. I mean, years ago, I'm serious, back in the 80s, I went to the Columbia School of Broadcasting in Los Angeles, and I auditioned to be, an announcer and everything, and you pay for this and the other, and they had there was like 30 people who were there, and you had to read the script, blah 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 blah. I know we run out of time, and at the end of the day, what happened was 10 of us were chosen, right? And they said, yeah, well, you guys, because you know they would do a weeding type thing, weed out the ones who you know they thought were good or not good, and I was so excited. I was like, okay, great. Well, my godmother had left me a
small inheritance before she passed. And my mother had control of it. And I told her, I said, I want to go to Columbia School of Broadcasting. Because it was enough to pay for my tuition for it, right? Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I don't think that's a good idea. Seriously. I don't think that's a good idea. And I'm like, huh? There was nothing I could do about it, you know? And so that went by the wayside. And I'm talking about, this was back in the 80s. And then as Janet knows and a few other folks know, you know, my journey through this whole thing up until now, I guess God said, well, I'm giving you your wish, but I didn't say you were going to make any money off of it, but you are on the radio, you're on the internet. So, you know, but it is what I enjoy. I do enjoy it. And keep building and getting more shows or whatever, and keep in touch with folks like yourself and everything. Maybe something monetary can come along. But I just enjoy, you know, the fact that I'm learning a lot from everybody, not just from the guests, but even from my co-hosts. I learn a lot, you know. So it's like school for me.
Yeah.
You follow me? It's like my college, you know. I truly look at it that way.
No, it's just like
very interesting.
Heads, you know, it was a random, you know, random. We bumped heads and, you know, we bumped into each other. And then that's how all this kind of came about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't discount that whole side of it, because sometimes that leads to other bigger situations happening. So, you know,
right.
You know, there's two sides to it. None of it is wrong. Let's put it that way. It just depends on how you want to approach it. It's a personal
mm-hmm.
preference thing. But yeah, I mean, you're doing something you love doing, and you know, maybe one point somebody hears your show and decides you get a couple of sponsors, and then money comes in from that. And then you know, so we're on the show doing what
you know,
paid to do. We're doing it because we like you, or you know, we want to get to speak about the topic that you're, you know, talking about or involved in. So
right.
You know, there's many sides to it, and like I said, none of it is wrong. It just depends on how you want to do it, or what you want your approach to be.
Exactly, that's a good point. Hey, we're running out of time. I'm going to have to go ahead and let us get on out of here. We got about 3 minutes left. And I'm sorry, I just got a text from somebody. We got about 3 minutes left. And quickly, you know what's so funny? That an individual sent me a script to read for a drop for a concert. And all of a sudden, things just went wrong with my Google. Janet, you know how Google can screw up. And I was like, oh, what the heck? And I had a deadline to do it. And luckily, I got it up and running. And was able to send them the, you know, like coming soon, coming live, you know, type, one of those type of things. But I was able to get it out there. So you never know. Yeah, you're right. Hey, Corey, thank you so much. I appreciate you. You and also St. James, you guys. Wow, what a great conversation. I truly appreciate it. Please come back whenever you can and let us know what else is going on with your music. We definitely will be playing it here on the show. Okay, my friend.
Everybody stay positive out there. Stay optimistic.
There you go. Amen. All right, my brother. You have a good night. Hey, you guys.
All
thank
right.
you for tuning in to the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network, the Michael Gay Show. Janet, any final words you want to share with us?
No, this was a great show. I enjoyed just listening, and see you next week. Same bat channel.
Okay, Officer Crenshaw. All right, Officer Crenshaw, your final word, sir.
Well, my wife's going to be extremely happy tonight. I'm sorry, Janet, but she's going to be happy. And I just thought about TMGS is thank God, thank my God sincerely.
All right.
Okay. I like that. That sounds good. Time and Chip, who normally is not able to stay with us much too long, and thank you for sharing that audio clip of your show the other week. That was hilarious. You guys get a chance. Time, you need to send it to them if you haven't.
Mike, I'm here. Hey, it was great, man. It was a great show. And, yes, if you get a chance, share that with Janet and Officer Crenshaw. That was, you know, a spot, you know, I'm working on a 60-minute routine right now. So, I'm, matter of fact, I'm doing the Hundao Casino on February 6th. So that's where I'll be going on Monday. But, yeah, hope they enjoy it. You get to share it with them. It was a great crowd, great time. And, hey, you know, I always try to drop you out something if I'm working on anything. So if they get shoot me a spot and let me know. It was a great show. So I'm always supportive of artists that's out there, you know, working hard and getting themselves together, man, because it is a tough business that you choose to be in. But, you know, when you're out there being creative and putting your game together, that's what it's all about.
Hey, man, that's true. Hey, you guys, thank you again. Real quick, I got to do this quick drop.
Hey, this is St. James, and you're tuned in to TMGN, the Michael Gay Network, home of the Michael Gay Show, and Let's Talk About It, with your host, Cotton Campbell. So keep it locked here for more great conversation on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. Let's get it, baby.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, you guys, we're going to get out of here, and please have a great remainder of your weekend. We'll be back next Saturday right here live. So, in the meantime, playing the outro that I normally do, we're going to leave with another track by Mr. Corey D. Williams. You guys, stay blessed, stay safe.